Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guest today will be writer-director Guy Moshe, whose new dystopian sci-fi feature, LX2048, is in theater September 25th. And this is a rather intriguing mix of the absolute worst things that could happen, and they apparently have all happened at the same time. Does that sound familiar to everyone? Hi, Guy. How are you?
I'm good. It's a good way of presenting it.
It is. I mean, we're currently living through a situation where it seems like one more thing is stacked up on top of the other. And right now, I don't know if to put, you know, Yellowstone supervolcano or kaiju rising out of the Pacific as the next things to happen. But
I think the next thing will happen is a pill that will be kind of promoted to the people so they don't get sick with corona.
Oh, goodness gracious.
That's the last thing that remains in the movie that still hasn't happened.
And let's talk about the movie. We have a situation where it is the year 2048. The Earth itself cannot be fully enjoyed during the daytime because the sun itself is a danger to life. So everybody has switched over to coming out at night. People are taking pills to stay level. People are replacing themselves with clones that are better suited to survive in the toxic sunlight. And it seems like normal people would have a hard time coping in such an environment. And that's where we find our protagonist, Adam, in a mentally and physically untenable situation. So congratulations for making us all more depressed.
Hopefully it's like helping ourselves laugh at the situation too, because that was the goal as well.
To see how Adam handles his collapsing perception of what he thought should have been a pretty good life, it's really a hard journey to watch, because you see hit after hit after hit come upon him. Everybody around him, both, you know, the regular people and the clones, are saying, take your meds, you'll feel better. And he's trying to feel better without chemical supplementation. And that fight is slowly driving him insane. So you wrote and directed this. Where did this need to find somebody to pile on come from?
I'm not suffering through that myself, thank God. So I'm a pretty happy person, actually. I just, oddly enough, or maybe not, because I think you really observe the right focus of the film, which is the lead character and his own personal journey within this kind of dark ride, so to speak. To me, it all started with I'm a happily married man. I got three kids of my own, and we, you know, like a lot of kind of family men, your social circle is comprised of a lot of families around you. And I think in 2015 or something, it was like the season of divorce. Like everybody around me was either getting separated or getting a divorce, and like all these kind of bizarre and twisted stories that come at you from both sides, men and women. And as a writer, I was very kind of intrigued by this, trying to kind of find some sort of a common thread. I thought it was something that I wanted to engage or write about. And the one thing that was evident to me was that if there was like the one common thread was that every person in those relationships kind of felt that they have not really lived up to their promise or to whatever in their imagination they were supposed to accomplish by that point in time. And that was kind of the main source of their unhappiness in life, which manifested itself in all sorts of different ways. And the other thing I couldn't help but notice is that the kind of the technological revolution that we're all going through had something to do with that notion or that feeling as well. So this was the starting point for me. And I think what I wanted to do, what I was recognizing, is that if the family structure in kind of modern day life is kind of feeling like it's falling apart a little bit, it doesn't, you know, I think in the old days, a lot of couples would have kind of wouldn't quit on a relationship as easily as we do today and would still kind of fight through it. And I think certainly in the West, people are having less and less children and at a later age in life at that as well. And I started thinking about what does all that mean for the future of the human race, you know, the biological future, so to speak. And I think that's where the whole thing kind of started from. So I wanted to kind of put a character in a future where this has all gone terribly bad. And then this character still has a certain innate insistence on connecting to our biological, physical roots in the same way that we do today, or that we have been doing until the end of 2019, at least. You know? So that's where it all came from.
Yeah, I remember reading a story. I don't even remember when. It was actually a news article. Some social scientist had looked at some historical data and came up with the theory that our idea of the nuclear family may have actually caused the communities that we've gotten used to fracture, because instead of having, you know, two or three generations in a household where everybody supports everybody, you know, the parents can go to work, the grandparents can watch the kids, it sort of enforced this idealism of separation, and that's caused a lot more harm than good. And you see how Adam in the story is suffering mentally and emotionally from being separated from his wife and his kids, and he's not handling it very well.
No, I think, by the way, what you just said is absolutely true, right? I mean, we live in an age, you know, and I think, you know, my parents' generation was kind of a transitional generation. Mm-hmm. The generation of my grandparents, their life was dedicated to their children. They had no you know, aspirations of their own, on their individuality or whatever. All the, like, they were kind of basically raising their kids, and that was their purpose, you know. And then with the generation of my parents, for instance, I think that started kind of transforming a little bit, where they were still holding that, you know, holding on to that torch that had been passed to them to a certain degree, but then also aware that it's not necessarily the way it has to be. And I think in my generation, and certainly younger generations right now, there is, and again, this is not me being critical of it, it's just more like observing it. There is a sense of the individual is above all. Like, our individual existence is the only thing that matters. And that may be very well and fine for us as individuals, but if you look at us in a macro way as a big society, right? That does have a lot of terrible repercussions down the line when you think about us as a community or as a society, and even more so mentally as creatures that were meant to be social creatures. We were meant to live together in a tribe or something, like a pack of wolves or something. And now, if you look at the world we live in, we're increasingly inventing technology that is supposed to save us time. You know, that was the idea of all the technology we've invented, is that we save ourselves time so we have more time for social interactions or for pleasure. And what ends up happening is our invention is taking up all of our time, way more than before. And we're engaging much more through devices with one another than directly with human beings. So I'm not anti-technology. I'm just kind of a participant observer. You know what I mean? So it's like, to me, it's just interesting, you know, that that's what's happening. And it's scary as well, because it really begs the question of, you know, in 20, 30 years from now, what will our physical bodies be needed for unless we're athletes, you know, or something like that?
Mm-hmm. And talk about that a little bit, because the way you wrapped all of this through not just everybody connecting and living their lives and interacting with their friends and their, you know, their schooling through virtual reality, and one of Adam's fears, greatest fears, is that this technology that his company is a major part of is going to get left behind by the next new version of it. And you see how that obsessiveness about how am I going to provide for my family if my livelihood goes away and my livelihood is tethered to this one vision of interconnectedness and artificial interconnectedness. And so, like, talk a little bit about how you threaded that fear of
the first
next...
of all, I love that you've seen all these things in the movie. It's just, you can't imagine how much fun it is for a writer director to see those underlying themes being recognized, so to speak. So yeah, it was clear to me in my kind of what I thought was a satirical critique of our current situation, is how a lot of us, I don't know if you've seen, there was like they just released a documentary on Netflix called The Social Dilemma or something, talking with all those guys that have become very rich in Silicon Valley from developing all the technology that basically would render us addicts to our devices, right? And they all talk about it with great care and so, like, you know, human empathy. But that's in retrospect. I mean, you are the ones who actually did that stuff, right? And I felt the same way about Adam. I didn't want to make Adam kind of a perfect human being. I wanted him to be flawed, because in that human flaw that each and every one of us has lies the problem, right? We all care about a variety of things until it gets into our own midst, and then because we're so you know, we have such a hard time fighting through our own existence, we give ourselves a pass about a lot of things that we care about. And that's how I perceived Adam. It's like, Adam cares about humanity and cares about what technology is doing to the world around him to such a degree that he's almost losing his mind. But at the same time, he's locked into this kind of catch-22 where he has to provide for his family. So if he stops doing the work that he's doing, he's not sure how he can provide for them. And that's enough of an excuse to keep pushing out there the same technology that he's so fearful of, you know? And that, to me, is very much the state of mankind right now. It's like governments and powerful corporations, you know, seem to have awareness of the harm and the danger in some of the things that they're pushing out there, and yet they still take the notion that the end justifies the means, and the end is very short-sighted to my view. You know? It's very, very short-sighted, like, in terms of the way that we look at the world. I mean, even think about the consumers in a place like the U.S. If we cared so much about the environment, we could just stop buying cars that run on fuel, you know? And that would be that. And then they'll stop manufacturing them. But as long as those are cheaper options for us out there, then each and every one of us, for the most part, not everyone, but we take the, we go for the, for that as an excuse for ourselves, you know?
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense to you, I don't know.
Oh yeah, it does. It does. As a former information technology professional who got obsoleted 3 different times. Oh yeah, I feel that.
It's kind of, you know what it reminds me of, Summer? It's kind of like recycling. I think like if we weren't, if you come to a place and there's no kind of, you know, blue trash bin where you know you have to put your recycling stuff in it, I don't know how many people wouldn't just be lazy and throw all their trash in one trash bin. You know what I'm saying? It's like it's kind of an interesting thing about personal responsibility, I think.
Yeah. Now, talk about the replacement beings, the clones they're called, and you end yourself, or when you die, a replacement version of you can be made available to continue on in your place, and it's all technology based. They create a version of you that has your memories. I'm sitting here watching that going, oh my God, he's doing a genetic engineering version of Invasion of the Body Snatchers. What?
I just try to think about, like, you know, I was, again, all in a good satirical measure, but I was trying to take a real kind of logical journey here. And I was like, okay, we know that the cloning is possible to a certain degree, of course, not like in the ease of the sci-fi universe, but it is possible. And yet that kind of progress is totally, at least on surface, has been halted completely because of moral and ethical issues. Then I was starting to ask myself, well, what would take it out of the box? What would make the authorities say, you know what, under these circumstances, since the technology is already that advanced, we're willing to do it here and here. And I just went with that kind of logic. So I thought the first usage for it could be to give people new organs or new limbs if they lost them in the service of a country in war. And then, but once that happens, like so many of our technologies that have actually been developed for fighting in the military and then found themselves into the civilian marketplace, I felt, well, now that they're faced with global warming, like who are they going to put out there to keep the world moving 24 hours a day? You know, you still have to have some sort of a daytime presence out there. And that's when I started imagining, well, for that purpose, if they could have solved it in any way, shape or form, they would. But they wouldn't just clone everybody because that would be too dangerous or too unethical. So then cloning becomes this kind of like solution for certain problems that the government wants a solution for. And this idea that led into this insurance plan in the film was again based on the notion that since in this near future we're going to have less and less babies, then that becomes a priority for the government to basically encourage people to give birth by some sort of an incentive. And I thought that's a pretty cool, funny incentive to give people that you know, this kind of that they get to at least enjoy something twisted in that. So it was all in good fun, but it was based on something that I thought was a reasonable evolution.
Sounds like a combination nightmare cooked up by Rod Serling and Alfred Hitchcock.
Okay, that's good.
The movie itself comes out September 25th. It'll be available on various streamers, all of them, Amazon, iTunes, Vudu, and more. You can rent it or own it. Guy, tell us where people can find you on the interwebs.
You see, this is maybe it wouldn't come as a shock, but like I'm so anti social media. They can find me on LinkedIn. That's one active account that I'm kind of keeping. I think, you know, I'm debating whether I should start doing this Instagram thing or whatever. But I this is the one thing I probably am sharing with Adam in the film, where it's like I had this instinct from the beginning of it to keep myself out of this Facebook, Instagram existence. I know it's not a great thing for marketing, but I don't know. I felt like I would save a lot of time from the day by doing that. but I am on LinkedIn for now.
Well, my
So maybe I'll talk
opinion.
to Emily afterwards. She'll convince me to change my ways.
Well, most of the film and writer creatives I follow are on Twitter. Twitter is a hellscape dumpster fire, but it also has bright moments of joy with people posting pictures of kittens. So consider that. But Guy, thank you so much for sharing your time and your insights on LX 2048 with us today.
Thank you for having me, Summer, and thank you for all the wonderful observations and thoughtful questions. I hope to speak to you in the future about the next project.
Hey, next time you have a sci-fi film, we'll be here waiting.
Fantastic.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Escape Pod is your destination for the best in modern short science fiction. Our intrepid crew of editors and hosts will bring you fun, thought-provoking in-flight entertainment every week as the pod careens around the multiverse. In the mood for a classic? We've got Anson Mount, also known as Captain Christopher Pike, reading Theodore Sturgeon. Want something a little more up-to-date? Jennifer R. Donahue's surveillance fatigue has you covered. In every sense. From classic space opera to intimate character drama. From heroic alien pets waiting for their families to herds of Einsteins and the benevolent conspiracy they're hatching, Escape Pod has it all. Take a ride with us at escapepod.org and buckle up because it's story time.
And yes, LX 2048 is a really, really interesting character study with a few dystopian and science fiction elements mixed in. And even though it's a little slow in a couple of places, it's very, very compelling when the intrigue ramps up. You see Adam starting to literally lose it, interacting with the clones during the day because they are the only living things he sees. There's one really quick scene where you see more people out at night having fun with each other, talking with each other, walking their pets, and you realize maybe he's losing it more than implied because he doesn't want to give up his social standing. He doesn't want to give up his day existence. But it's being taken away from him because of his illness and his soon-to-be archaic technology job. Anyway, it's a really interesting film. It's, like I said, it's kind of slow in a couple of places, but once you start to unpack the multiple levels that are being looked at, it becomes a really, really fascinating film. Maybe there's too much going on. I can see where a few other people who have talked about the movie are kind of, I guess, distracted by ping-ponging between a couple of extra things going on. But the way it's shot and the angst and the just emotional distress that almost all of the characters are in is a fascinating perspective to observe. So check out LX 2048 when you get a chance. It's should be on all of your usual digital retailers by now. But if you have any questions or comments on the dystopian exploration of existential dread, or just any dystopian movie you've seen recently, indie or mainstream, please feel free to call in. The number is 602-635-6976, or shoot me an email, summer@sliceofsci-fi.com. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi through Apple Podcasts, through Stitcher, Google Play Podcasts, TuneIn, iHeartRadio Podcasts, and Player FM. And if you are listening on Apple or Stitcher, please leave us a review. Let others know that you are enjoying the show, and maybe they should check it out for themselves. You can follow us on Twitter, at Slice of Sci-Fi, and yes, I will dive into a conversation with you, or answer a question. And you can find us on YouTube, youtube.com/sliceofscifi. Check us out over there. We have movie reviews, and going to be experimenting with a few other things, so keep an eye on that. And of course, there is the website, sliceofscifi.com. Come on by, comment on the interviews that pique your interest, or on the reviews that we have done here on the website, and leave your own ratings for those. I'd like to thank everyone who is currently supporting this show and all the others in the Slice of Sci-Fi universe, including Writers After Dark and Babylon Podcast. Your support, your pledges, your donations really do help keep things going around here. So thank you all. Thank you all so much. And if you'd like to check out adding your support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Read through the different support tiers, and if you join, you are eligible for perks. DVDs, Blu-rays, 4K UHD movies, box sets for TV shows, and of course, books. Many, many books. Many of them need to find new homes. And you, my supporters and listeners, get first dibs. So that's what the perk levels are on the various support tiers at Patreon. So check those out. And if a monthly commitment is not something in your budget these days, but you want to help, the link to use is paypal.me/sci-fi summer. And like I said, every nickel helps. So thank you all for every bit of support. It is truly, truly greatly appreciated. But that'll do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.